Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's our best friend and buddy, columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Welcome back to the Ken Lovett Show, Ken.
It's good to be back.
So I want to ask you a couple of questions. First of all, Governor Cuomo is now launching a bid to unseat New York Republicans to help win the House for the Democrats. A lot of people think that has to do with his presidential ideas. And then, on the other hand, he's not doing an awful lot to help the Democrats win back the state Senate. So what do we make of all of this?
Well, I think there is some truth to the fact that he's certainly, if he hasn't decided to run for president, he's doing everything he can to at least lay the groundwork in case he does. And I think helping for the first time being aggressive and trying to flip the House to the Democrats, you know, he's taking advantage. The governor has been accused of not being progressive enough. And over the last year, he's tried to woo back the progressives. And this is the latest effort. I also think in some ways, it's the governor looking at 2018, his own reelection. And again, you know, the progressives haven't trusted him. Last time they flirted with putting up a candidate against him, actually one ran as a Democrat, Zephyr Teachout, and you know, put a scare into him. So I think this is his way of also trying to court back the progressives for his reelection bid now and beat back potentially a serious challenge. But you're right. You know, the first thing some of the on the left said when he announced this idea, that which we kind of broke in my Monday column, was that, well, that's great, but what about his own house? What about the state Senate? And why isn't he trying to reunify the Democrats there?
And in fact, he must have been a little embarrassed because the entire Democratic congressional delegation, I know you've written about this, let him have it and said basically, those Democrats should get back where they belong, those dissident Democrats, the ones I call the traitors under Jeff Klein of the Bronx. And they're saying, get back where you belong and take the state Senate. Where is Cuomo and all of that?
Oh, he's been very quiet on that. As a matter of fact, he was asked about it recently, and he said, sure, it would be optimum if the Democrats controlled the Senate, but he didn't exactly have his heart into it. And you know, previously, just a few weeks earlier, he had said, well, remember when the Democrats controlled it in 2009 and 10, and it was kind of a disaster. So, he does not look to be in a hurry to help fix that situation.
Well, is there ever a point at which people will hold him responsible for that kind of behavior, that kind of political behavior, or don't they just know anything about the way that the legislature works?
I think it's the latter. I don't think, you know, most people don't even know there's an IDC.
The Independent Democratic Conference.
Right. I think you're seeing more people get it now, more of the activists, but for the most part, people don't pay attention to it, I don't think, out there, which is sad, they should. But I think I don't see it necessarily. Again, where it would come back to haunt him is if he doesn't do anything for them next year, he's going to get hammered on the left for it. He's going to get hammered by the progressives, maybe the Working Families Party, which is a really union-backed organization. Maybe they put up a candidate. Last time they were going to endorse Teachout, and at the last minute, Mayor Bill de Blasio from New York City came up and cut a deal and really pulled Cuomo from the fire, and they ended up begrudgingly endorsing Cuomo. Teachout ended up running as a Democrat.
So is there any chance that the Working Families Party, as you say, the labor-backed party, which has an awful big following in New York, is there any chance they will, in the primary, endorse somebody other than Cuomo?
As long as they can get their 50,000 votes, which is needed to stay as a regular, legitimate party on the ballot, party on the ballot, I think it's a possibility. They don't like him. They don't trust him. But on the other hand, you know, Cuomo is right in a way. If you look at all the polls, he's doing really well among liberals. and especially in New York City, which is what you need if you're a
they
Democrat.
They all think he's his father.
But he's also, he's done stuff. And so Cuomo makes the distinction between the professional left, which hates him, and the regular left that are everyday people.
Define that. What's the
professional left are people like the Working Families Party, people in labor, who are basically paid, he would say, to, you know, advance an agenda, and they're pushing him, and they don't like him and trust him. But, you know, he's going to run around next year, and he's going to say, not only in the first term did we get gay marriage and the SAFE Act gun control law, but we're raising the minimum wage to 15. We're raising the age of criminal responsibility. He's building up a progressive record, whether you think it could have gone further or not, but he has he's building up a record where he can go to the liberals and say, look at all this stuff, and it's going to be harder for them to fight that.
Well, you can't deny that he has, he knows what he's doing. He's a tough guy. An awful lot of the insiders don't like him. They consider him to be a bully, to be oppressive, and all of that. But it's not the insiders who carry a primary, right? Speaking of which, who you got that might run against him in a primary?
the popular names are Eric Schneiderman, the Attorney General.
Yeah, but that ain't going to happen.
I agree. I think the only way Schneiderman runs for governor next year is if Cuomo's numbers tank so badly that Cuomo says, I'm not going to run again. I don't see Schneiderman giving up a safe reelection bid to run for...
Now, I like Schneiderman, but I'll be honest with you, he hasn't got the guts.
No, and DiNapoli's name pops up, and again, same thing. I don't see him doing it. If it's an open seat, one thing, an open position, but I don't know right now. You know, you hear
who gets a free ride.
You hear Stephanie Miner, who is the Syracuse mayor, very good, but I don't know how she raises money. She doesn't have any real backing outside of New York of Syracuse.
Well, Zephyr Teachout couldn't raise any money either. She ran against him. She won most of the upstate county.
Yeah, she got 33% of the vote. But the reality is, a Democrat incumbent, chances are, unless they're really like, you know, Bill de Blasio, who is, you know, liberal, progressive, they're going to lose about a third of the vote. And look, Hillary Clinton in her primary against Bernie Sanders, you know, she lost a third of the vote or whatever it was here. People lose that. So there's almost a built-in kind of loss. And if you're a progressive running, there's almost a built-in audience that is going to go for anyone but Cuomo.
Well, I like the Stephanie Miner idea, who was the mayor of Syracuse, who basically spit in Cuomo's eye, metaphorically.
And I think she'd like to do it literally.
Yeah. And she's been terrific. She's a gutsy lady, and he deserves an opponent, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think anyone deserves an opponent, but I don't see her in the end doing it. Maybe I'm wrong, but I see her more likely running for Congress. You know, the guy in the Syracuse area, John Katko, a Republican, he's more of a moderate Republican. He voted against the House health care bill. But he's seen as one of the most vulnerable members of the delegation. And I could see her running for Congress potentially.
Now, Andrew comes in and Andrew Cuomo, I should be more respectful, comes in and announces that he is going to try to get all of the Democrats all of the Republicans who are in Congress diselected. He's going to go after them and in order to help take the Democratic National Party take back the House. Can he deliver?
What's interesting, it's going to be interesting because there's 9 Republicans. He's targeting 6 of them. He's targeting, and in those 6 districts, 2 of them, John Faso in the Hudson Valley and Collins up in the Buffalo area, he's been at war with over the health care because they pushed an amendment to the bill, I should say, that would shift the local cost of Medicaid outside New York City onto the state.
Which is, as Trump would say, is huge, just in case anybody listening to this doesn't know that. That would mean that Cuomo would have to get more money for his budget.
Billions.
And it would...
Or
it,
cut
it,
bills.
It would embarrass him, and he doesn't want to do
and
that.
And he doesn't want to do that. So he's
although it's not that terrible an idea.
But what's interesting is of the 6, no, and, you know, if it provided property tax relief, but of the 6 districts they're targeting, Cuomo did poorly in 2014 in all 6 of them, really badly. He lost to Astorino. And the 3 Republicans they're not targeting, including down on Long Island, Lee Zeldin, and including on Staten Island, Dan Donovan, Cuomo did well. So people are like, why aren't you going after Katko, who's vulnerable? Why aren't you going after the two in districts who actually perform well? And is it an albatross hanging around the Democrats' neck, whoever the candidate will be, that the governor, who's not popular in some of those areas, is backing them and aggressively? Now, the Cuomo people and the people close to the party and the effort say things have changed since 2014. His numbers have gone up and the whole Trump election has changed everything. And they feel there's a real opportunity, Faso is in a kind of swing district and some of the others are. And they feel that they can pull this off. And just to put it in perspective, they're targeting 6 seats. The House in all, the Democrats need 24 nationally to flip it. So you're talking potentially at least a quarter could come from New York.
He's had some interesting choices here. I mean, obviously, Faso and Stefanik in this area are people who are at some risk. But Peter King in Long Island?
Well, they're not really focused on King. I know the Nassau County chairman said they want to go after Pete King, but he isn't on the list of 6. But, however, Pete King is in a district on Long Island where a Democrat just won in a special election for an assembly seat, and that was like diehard Republican country, and she won big this special election. So some Democrats, and as I said, the Nassau County Democratic chairman, see this as an opportunity to actually beat King, because if that's a sign that even in that kind of area that a Democrat won an assembly seat in a special election.
The real question here is whether we're going to have what political scientists have always called a redefining election. Are we going to really change the composition of the House as happened after Watergate, other places, things like that? Will the Democrats be able to take back the House of Representatives? Because if they do, Ken Lovett, then, you know, the chairman and subpoenas and Trump and all of this trouble will be huge. So the question is, how much do they hate Trump?
Oh, the Democrats hate Trump. There's no doubt about that. To the point where they should start also putting out an agenda, because you can't just run on "I hate Trump." They tried that in a sense last year, and Trump won. Nobody thought he would, but I think with the House, look, it could be Republicans are bracing for the potential of a disastrous midterm election. We saw this in '94 with Bill Clinton. He was in the second year of his first term and the Republicans took Congress, and, he had to basically hold a press conference to say, yes, I'm still relevant. And then he started working with the Republicans and triangulating his message with Trump. Right now, a lot of Republicans are frustrated. They promised a lot of things out of the gate and they haven't been able to deliver, whether it was, tax reform, health care reform. Trump hasn't been able to get it through Congress yet. And if they don't, I think there's going to be a lot of vulnerability in House seats for going back on their promises.
So now Representative Collins, who he is going after along with Faso, he really apparently emotional terms, but other terms, hates him. And Collins, didn't he beat the lieutenant governor?
Yeah, Collins, in a close race, Collins beat Kathy Hochul, who is Governor Cuomo's lieutenant governor. Hochul, since then, there's been redistricting, and so it's a much more Republican seat now. It's a very pro-Trump district, so that would be a tough race. Hochul, I spoke to a couple weeks ago and said, going to go for a rematch? And she said no. She said she really wants to run as lieutenant governor again. She feels that being in Congress right now, you can't get anything done. It's just so gridlocked. And her words, I feel I can get more done here, working with the governor.
Well, let's talk about that, Ken Lovett. This is interesting. I have known many. I'm old now, and I've known many. Lieutenant governors who thought if they played their cards right, they would end up as the governor of New York. I've always thought nonsense. Is that possible that she's thinking that if he runs for president, she would succeed him?
Well, this will shock you, Alan. She says no, that doesn't play into her thoughts at all. But of course it has to. I mean, look, this is a governor who's obviously at least seriously thinking about running for governor, president in 2020. Should he? And should he succeed or should he step down while he's doing it, however he does it, or he wins, then she would become the governor. Whether that means she would get the nomination, you know, in 2022. Who knows? You know, we're a long, long way away, but certainly it doesn't hurt to be in that position.
Quite right. Quite right. Okay. So, so now there is this whole question. It's complicated, and I hope you'll break it down for us about the so-called stipends that have that go to the members of the Democrats who broke away, the so-called IDC, Independent Democratic Conference. What's that all about?
So, if you're a committee chair or a ranking member of the minority party, a ranking member of a committee, you get a stipend. That's always been that way. It's thousands of dollars, depending. It could be anywhere. If you're the leader, $41,500. If you're the majority leader, and as low as like $9,000, I think it is, if you're a ranking member
so
on a committee.
Just to get it straight, they're always bitching about how little money they get. That's the money that we don't, when we say that they make 79, whatever.
$79,500 is the base salary.
Yes, yeah. Then they get these Lulus and they get this extra money.
Right.
And so they can build it up a bit. And so, then anything that they can grab on the outside because of their positions.
So what happened here is you had members who were either with the Independent Democratic Conference or upstate members. Flanagan, the majority leader, John Flanagan, he's a Republican from Long Island, decided to get them a little extra money. And for the first time the last few years, they've been giving certain members, a total of eight the last few years, stipends that are earmarked for committee chairman, but these people weren't committee chairmen that they were getting. They were vice chairmen, which there were never, ever vice chairman titles.
And there's a law that says exactly who gets the money, right. And they have obviously violated the law, right?
Well, I can't, you know, that's up for the investigators to find out. But what happened was when they filed the paperwork with the state comptroller's office saying, pay this senator as the education committee chairman, is that fraud? Because the person wasn't the education committee chairman. They were the education committee vice chairman. And there's nothing in the law that says a vice chairman could get a stipend.
So they go to the Albany district attorney, a guy I have great respect for, David Soares, and they say, you're in charge of Albany. Why don't you investigate this? And he says,
nah. Like you said, you know, we've seen all this corruption over the last few years. Just, you know, state government, public corruption is just not what he's focused on or has focused on. Certainly, Preparar made a name for himself in Albany by doing that. But
Preparar, of course, Ken Levitt had a lot of resources. They purposely starved the Albany DA so he doesn't have those resources.
Yeah. And so he has not gone after it. But we have found out that the Brooklyn U.S. attorney and the is looking into it, sent subpoenas out, or at least one subpoena out, looking for information. We also know that the state attorney general's office started looking at it, although I don't think that's a formal investigation, because by law, the comptroller's office would have to give them a referral for them to get involved, and I don't think that has happened. But it is being looked at. Whether it was a crime, I don't know. You know, the Republicans say, you know, yes, we put down that these people were committee chairs when they weren't, but it was only an accounting method because the only way that money could be released was if you said they were a committee chair, but we have the discretion on who gets the money.
And others say no. The world's oldest defense is, I didn't know the gun was loaded.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ken Levitt, I wanted to ask you another question here, and that has to do with a guy who I have great respect for, Tom DiNapoli, the comptroller of the state of New York. Obviously, what happened was Andrew Cuomo and his gang, and I think he was a real bully here, to be honest with you, came along and said, we're going to strip you of your ability to pre-audit some contracts between the state and some of the not-for-profits. We're taking that away from you. Then he gets into real trouble, Cuomo does, because his best friend, his so-called brother, and his brother's friends, it turns out they are accused of being pretty big crooks. And there's a theory that had they not taken DiNapoli, the comptroller's rightful audit process, away from him, then maybe we could have stopped this.
That is a theory. Certainly it couldn't have hurt. I can't sit here and say DiNapoli's office would have caught all this stuff. You know, I don't know.
Well, there's other stuff they haven't caught.
Yeah, exactly. There's, you know, and people find a way around it. However, this is a governor who does not like outside, independent reviews. And I'm not even going to say investigation because that's, but reviews. And so in 2011, he stripped, he said, oh, it's for efficiency reasons. He got the legislature, because he was in his first year, to strip DiNapoli of this audit power, or this review power of contracts before they're approved. And now they got into trouble. So the governor's reaction to all this is, rather than say, okay, maybe it was a mistake, let's give it back to DiNapoli, the power to review, he says, let's create all these inspector generals that I will appoint.
Yeah. So the chicken appoints the fox appoints somebody to look at the
and
chicken.
And it just goes right into everything we've known about the governor so far. You know, he appoints a state police superintendent who worked for him in the AG's office. He appoints an inspector general who worked for him in the AG's office. His JCOPE, the State Ethics Commission, worked for him originally.
Sometimes known as J-Joke.
Yeah. And so... you know, he doesn't like to have these independent reviews. And certainly, given what's going on, the legislature is considering, as the legislative session ends, approving legislation that would procurement reform that would give the comptroller back that power. So, I don't know if they'll pass it, though.
So let's assume for a second that they'll pass it. I agree with you. But let's assume for a second that they pass it. Will he veto it?
It's going to be a hard situation for him to veto because, you know, Mr. Reformer, right? I don't know if he vetoes it, but he's trying like...
Well, he finds technical terms.
But he's trying like heck right now to make sure it doesn't pass.
And so why wouldn't the legislature pass it, Ken Lovett?
Yeah, it depends if they want to go to war with him or not. You know, they keep saying how mad they are and how angry they are, and we're an independent branch of government. But then when push comes to shove, they have yet to really say, we're going to go to war with this guy. Now, if he did veto it, it would cause an interesting showdown because since he's taken office in 2011, there has yet to be a single veto override of any of Governor Cuomo's vetoes. Will they do it here? I think if they pass it, they do it knowing that they're setting up a veto override showdown.
I saw an article that you wrote, Ken Lovett, Catholic Bishop Organization New York, wants to do away with legal time frames in sex abuse cases. We've only got 2 minutes, but can you give it to us?
Yeah, there's a bill called the Child Victims Act that's been pushed for a number of years and actually passed the Assembly this year for the first time since 2008 that would make it easier for the victims, the adult victims of child sex abuse to sue or bring charges against those who did it.
Including, we're talking about, obviously, some priests.
Right. And the one real point of contention that the church opposes and others, the Boy Scouts oppose, is a provision that would open a one-year look-back window that would allow those who, under the current law, could no longer sue, the statute of limitation has run out, to be able to bring cases, civil cases, for a year once the law is passed.
But it is interesting that the Catholic bishops want it.
And no, the church is deadly opposed to that. So instead,
okay,
they say,
"Let's go back." Okay, so forget I asked that question. Okay. go ahead. So the church's position on this is
they deadly oppose it. They do not want to look back because they feel it would be a ton of money, a ton of cases. And so what they said now is, well, we don't want to look back, but what we would like to do is get rid of the statute of limitations on criminal sex abuse cases, so you can bring a criminal case anytime, no matter when it comes forward.
They don't want to be sued civilly, but they are willing to have people who have committed sexual crimes to be arrested.
Yes, and they're willing to be sued civilly moving forward. They don't want that look back. They don't want cases from 40, 50 years ago coming back. They feel it'll bankrupt them.
So Ken Lovett, as we close down the legislature, is there anything that, and we only have seconds to go, but is there anything that we should be keeping our eyes on?
I mean, the extension of mayoral control over the New York City school system, that's the only thing they have to get done. They're going to pass legislation to outlaw child marriages as young as 14. That's allowed in this state. They're going to bring it up to 18 and 17 under certain situations. But no, nothing really huge. It's really going to end with a thud, I think.
Always great to talk to Ken Lovett, and I hope, Ken, that you'll be reporting back to us about Uber Upstate happening in upstate New York, which we really do need, in my opinion.
It's going to be happening before July 4th.
It's always great to have Ken Lovett, Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, with us. Ken, thanks for joining us.
Anytime. Be well.